The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're busy. We had a busy weekend, but now we are fired up, ready to go for another week of watchdog in the news and some of the stuff that's going on here. Well, judge for your own self. Let's get to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
First of all, I did notice at the beginning of CBS News, their lead story was the Trump administration is planning a change that could have a dramatic impact on immigration. And it's what the president's been talking about for a long time. If you're going to come into this country, you better come in with job skills and with a job to work and not just come in and go right on welfare. Like, that is considered some shocking, groundbreaking stuff that we're not going to let people just come into this country and immediately go on the dole from hardworking taxpayers. I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, you can still help out the people who are true refugees, but for the people who come in here, just so they can, I mean, they'll drop a baby right on this side of the border, and then we get to pay for everything. I don't think that's a great strategy, and I'll explain some of the other implications of our state sanctuary policy coming up in just a few minutes here. But our top story, I saw a story down at Seattle City Hall over the weekend. On Friday afternoon, there's a group of climate activists, and they meet in various places. And they met at City Hall on Friday. And there's a 13-year-old girl there, seventh grader. And she's with a 25-year-old guy. And they're both part of some group that fancies themselves as climate activists. And they're trying to get local politicians to approve a local Green New Deal. So they have no economic sense whatsoever. So this 13-year-old girl, she pulls out a can of spray paint and she paints on the Seattle City Hall. If you've seen, we've spent a fortune on the City Hall, and there's lots of steps that go up to the main doors. And she spray painted "Strike for Our Futures." And there was a group that, you know, part of this protest group. They put this 13-year-old girl in handcuffs, and then one of the protesters tried to tell the cops that she's only 13.
Get her.
So I think that's the 13-year-old girl. It's somebody in that video. What the F? And then she says the F word because she has just defaced with permanent spray paint Seattle City Hall. And then she sobbed.
You realize she's 13 years old. She didn't know.
That's great. We'll figure it out at the precinct. Okay. We're not going to sit here while we're surrounded by a bunch of people that want to make their opinions known.
So on the act, you realize she's just 13 years old. And so they've posted on Twitter this video of this 13-year-old girl getting arrested. And their whole mission is to get a Green New Deal for Seattle. And this girl is just, she's just, I don't know if she's a tool of these adults. I don't know if she's just a little punk herself. But Cairo 7, they reported on this as well.
It was a 13-year-old girl in handcuffs after Seattle City Hall was vandalized. But witnesses blame today's incident on an unfortunate mishap. They say that 13-year-old girl thought she was using a washable spray chalk to do that stuff during a climate protest. They say she was devastated to learn that it was not. She and a 25-year-old man were taken into custody for property damage. Seattle police report that the man was booked into jail while the teen was released to her parents.
Unfortunate mishap. She thought it was washable, but it was permanent paint that she used in gigantic letters sprawling over about 10, 12 feet. Strike for our future! But they called it an unfortunate mishap. And on the Facebook page, or the Twitter page where they posted this, they said the same thing. Unfortunate mishap. And they posted, here's what they had tried to use, a fully washable chalk. It washes off easily with a cup of water. That's not what they used. They used a permanent spray paint that costs a lot of money when you spray paint and deface City Hall. So either this 13-year-old activist, she knows how to save the planet, but she can't read the can of spray paint that's in her hands? I don't know if I can believe that. Also, and they say she was released to her parents. Well, Mom, Dad, you ain't exactly doing a bang-up job, but I'm sure Mom and Dad are super proud of their 13-year-old. I bet they think that she is just the kitten's mittens because she's such a climate activist. Maybe Mom and Dad are too. And there she is on a Friday afternoon running around with some 25-year-old guy who they claim, he just handed her the can. She just used it, thought it was going to wash off. So we got these 13-year-old kids who have no critical thinking skills, but they're going to tell us how to save the planet. And then they sob when they get put in handcuffs when they've committed probably thousands of dollars worth of damage to clean up graffiti at City Hall. You got city crews. They get paid when you factor in everything. They get paid a lot. It's not easy to get permanent paint off the nice stone that they used at City Hall. And then she sobs like a little baby when she's being taken into custody. But let's go back to release to her parents. If the parents played a role in who and what their daughter is now and her critical thinking skills and her desire, she either desired to vandalize with permanent paint or was really stupid to not know what she was spraying, one or the other. I don't know that I'd release her to her parents. Unless she's, maybe they're great parents. That's a possibility. It's a small percentage of great parents who have 13-year-olds that are vandals like that. But it happens. Maybe she's just been taken over by these adults, including the 25-year-old guy who was hauled off to jail. But enough of this enabling and coddling and release to her parents, because we've already seen who and what these kids can develop into. And maybe it's time to just crack down a little bit on all this mindless, but because it's in the name of climate activism, she'll get treated with kid gloves because all the politicians are firmly on board with this girl. It's amazing. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
We are following two murder stories. One we told you about on Friday down in Lakewood, where a barbershop owner that was just as beloved as a community member can get. She was 57 years old, Pyong Sun Ryan. She was very generous with the military community that is so big down in Parkland And everybody seemed to know and love her. There was a growing memorial over the weekend. We now have seen the charging papers. 40-year-old Angel Manuel Martinez, aggravated first-degree murder. And what we know from these charging papers is the police believed he had been smoking meth, tried to carjack vehicles in the middle of this crime binge that then included going into this barbershop and murdering this beloved woman. And then he took her keys, locked the door behind him so her body would be locked inside to delay them finding her by a couple seconds or minutes, I guess. We are, based on some tips we've gotten, we are looking into the immigration status of the perp in this case. Very difficult because we're a sanctuary state, and we're told by all politicians that in sanctuary states, they don't ask, they don't care, but then they tell us that the crime rate is incredibly low, even though they have no stats because they don't ask immigration status. But we have gotten a couple of very credible tips, and we do have the inquiry out on that, as well as the there's a manhunt in Prosser where a man is accused of killing his wife, Silvestre Rojas Fuentes. He was on the run in a 1989 Ford Bronco. Red Washington license plate B, as in boy, BAP2794. Red Ford Bronco with a cream colored top. Authorities are looking for him, but there are law enforcement sources there who also say we should look into immigration status. Now, if that's the case, if we have two more murders in our sanctuary state, just as people wanted to blame the president for El Paso, as I've told you, there is a much more direct connection between sanctuary state status and some of the murders that have happened, including the Kittitas County deputy who was murdered by an illegal. And as Jay Inslee continues, he's still running for president. 0 out of 500 Democrats in the New Hampshire poll last week. Zero said Jay Inslee was their guy. And yet he's still running for president, and he still is getting an absolute free pass on the ramifications of sanctuary state policies. And he gets a free pass because the media is controlled by the Democrat Party and vice versa. And so the media will not say anything, even if Jay Inslee's on the fringe, even if he has no chance, they still want to give him political protection as a media body. And so they won't bring it up when he does his MSNBC and CNN interviews. But I would encourage them to ask if he accepts any responsibility when illegals kill in our state, in our sanctuary state, if they would not have been here, if not for his sanctuary policy, does he feel any sense of responsibility? Because he's the one who came out and said, yeah, Trump was responsible for El Paso. Well, there is a 1,000,000,000 time more direct connection between sanctuary policy and when an illegal kills. So if you're going to be consistent, Jay, if you're going to blame the president when tragic murders happen, you must accept even more responsibility when tragic murders happen in your state that are directly tied to your sanctuary policy. Speaking of which, finally, in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top trending.
We told you last week about a 11-year-old girl who was being used just in a sickening way. CBS, CNN, they had this crying 11-year-old girl whose father was part of the raids, the ICE raids of chicken processing plants down in Mississippi. And so CBS, CNN, they found this 11-year-old girl whose father was arrested, and they couldn't wait to put this crying girl on television.
Government, please put your heart. Let my parent be free with everybody else, please.
Magdalena Gomez Gregorio pleaded for the return of her dad, one of hundreds of undocumented immigrants rounded up Wednesday by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
My dad didn't do nothing. He's not a criminal.
The 11-year-old and other children of those arrested stayed at a community center gymnasium overnight after about 600 immigration agents targeted food processing plants across central Mississippi. Some employers were also arrested.
And CNN used that same 11-year-old girl on their newscast.
I need my dad for me. My dad didn't do nothing. He's not a criminal.
And what I said on Friday was, look, when any kid, American citizen kid, has a parent who's arrested for a crime, it's sad for the kids. But we don't put every crying child on when we arrest their parents for a crime, when the parents are American citizens. But they couldn't wait to do it with this 11-year-old girl whose father was arrested for being an illegal. And in fact, that's what I said on Friday. And over the weekend, Mark Morgan, the acting commissioner of Customs and Border Patrol, he said almost the exact same thing.
The majority of time in these cases, these individuals that are here illegally, they also steal identities of U.S. citizens. They get fraudulent documents, Social Security cards, and et cetera. And so it's not just a victimless crime that's going on here. First of all, they are here illegally, and then a lot of times there's additional fraud that goes with this for them to try to get these jobs in these companies. So I understand that the girl's upset, and I get that. But her father committed a crime. And just so the American people know also, is that girl, her mother was home, and she was reunited with her mother within a few hours that night.
It was just another example of where the media had an agenda. And yet we arrest American citizens who break the law every single day. And their children are sad about that. But we don't put them in front of the camera because there's no agenda. There's no point in it. But, man, there is an agenda with this, with illegals, with CNN, CBS, and the other networks. That's for dang sure. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on especially that 13-year-old girl who spray-painted Seattle City Hall and then was sobbing if she was put in cuffs. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. That's 98973. Seahawks, one preseason game down. Another one coming up this coming Sunday. Brock Huard will give us his assessment of where the team is. The Monday Monson quarterback coming up next.
Monday Monson quarterback.
Blue in it. Check, 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 check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Benny Russell. Lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up. Making the catch. Touchdown Seahawks.
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Monday afternoon, and that means it's time for the Monday Monson quarterback. Filling that role, the inestimable Brock Huard joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Why do you find this so funny?
Oh, we're getting back into rhythm, Dory, because we've been like on Thursdays, Wednesdays. You know, it's nice to actually do a Monday Monson quarterback and have it on Monday and have a legitimate football to talk about with this thing. Like, and you know it, we've done this for a number of years. It's going to be here for real, in just a couple weeks. But it's just nice to get back into rhythm with you.
Yeah, and you called the game for TV on Thursday night, that first preseason game. Did you like what you saw?
I did. I loved how hard the guys played, and Coach Carroll talked about that yesterday as he kind of addressed the media after watching the game tape. You know, I loved the stories throughout the game. I loved the fact that even late into that game, to the very end, you see Deshaun Shedd out there and guys playing at a really high level. We got introduced, the Seahawks fans did, for those of us that have watched, Marquise Blair and Cody Barton, but you know, we've seen them here on the practice field, but we all got introduced to them of what they're capable of doing, running and hitting. And to me, Dory, that's such a big, big part of this story. And I think we'll be through this preseason and into the regular season is just bringing back some of that physical intimidation that as much as this is Russell Wilson's team and there's a lot of continuity on offense, and I think we all feel great about what they're going to do on that side. This is still a Pete Carroll-led team. This is still a John Schneider-drafted team. This is still a defensive team in their makeup and mindset in so many ways. And it was fun to see that on display Thursday night.
Yeah, they clearly that was what Pete was talking about after the game on Thursday, was he just loves when they are playing so physical. It is kind of weird because in years past, the starters would play some in the first preseason, but I'm noticing this trend line all around the NFL, Brock, where they are not, or they're minimizing. I know that Russell and some starters are going to play this coming Sunday, but they just don't want to risk them at all the way that they have in years past.
No, and this has been a trend during the last couple of years, and frankly, this is kind of how it works, I think, in this business, much like other businesses, is you kind of look at your competitors and see what they're doing, and see whether or not it works and whether it is indeed a good practice. And there have been some teams over the last few years that have already taken more risk in that way. Risk in the sense that, wow, this is different than it's been done. It's different than the year that I played in. Like, you've got to get your work and you got to play. You got to get these reps. And really there were the, you know, the LA Rams were as aggressive as anybody last year saying, no, we'll get the work in on the practice field. We'll get the work in ones-on-ones. We'll get the work in with guys protecting one another rather than trying to take somebody out. And, well, the Rams did what? They were in the Super Bowl and made it all the way there. And I think because of it, you are going to see even more and more teams say, well, maybe this is best practice. You know, maybe like Jack Patera back in the day didn't give guys water in Cheney, and that wasn't best practice. And you evolve and you move the, you know, you move some of the, you know, that data forward.
Yeah.
And yes, you're going to see more and more of this with less and less, I think, stars playing throughout the preseason.
Okay, a couple other things that I talked about in my show the last couple of days, Brock, that I played this on the pregame show on Thursday. I was wondering if you ever had to deal with this. This is Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins.
Different center, obviously, adds an element to it. What do you hope to get out of this with Garrett getting his first snaps?
Well, I'm going to take it back to how much he sweats again. He promises that it's not a problem in games. And it remains to be seen because his shorts today were soaked. And he says it's not a problem on game day. So the moment of truth, Friday night. But apparently, you know, when they keep those domes air conditioned and you get a break on the bench and you sit with the cooling fans, I'm hoping that really helps. So that's a big thing I'm going to take away from Friday night is how tough was it to grip the ball after he snaps it to me. If it is tough, we might be in pistol and shotgun all year, which Coach Kubiak and Kevin wouldn't like very much.
So. Okay, so that was one thing that Kirk Cousins wants out of the preseason. His center sweats profusely and can affect the grip on the ball. Was that ever a problem for you?
Fortunately for me, I didn't necessarily have that problem with a starter. Now, you had guys we called swamp butt. Mm-hmm. And they were, it was painful in practice if you had to take a snap from them. Now, my older brother, Damon, who's a little more of a germaphobe, Dory, he had a center in college that was a sweater, I mean, profusely. And Trevor had to change his pants at halftime.
Wow.
So you would have, you know, situations like that where if you get a swamp butt as a starter, then, you know, they try to do what they can and maybe make a wardrobe change to try to help the situation out.
Wow. That's an intriguing problem to have. I never realized.
Sorry, I also had a problem. You make a transition. When you're in high school, my center was a guy by the name of Jack Widmond, who I outweighed by 30 pounds. Jack was about 190 and, you know, kind of had a little butt, and you knew right where the ball was going to be snapped.
Yeah.
I got to college, and my first snap was from a guy named Opu Semenavage, and Opu was almost 350 pounds. And I had no idea, like, where the ball was going to come. The surface area was gigantic. So trying to figure out exactly where that ball's coming back was also a process.
The things we never think about. And then the one I brought up on Friday that we had a big debate on the show. Did you hear about the Jets coach, Adam Gase, and talking about his wife's C-section?
Briefly, yes.
Okay.
Briefly.
The coach of the Jets, Adam Gase, when he was an assistant coach for the Denver Broncos, he left his wife C-section, and she confirmed her organs were still outside of her. He left the C-section to go meet with Peyton Manning, and I had no problem with that. Ursula thought that that was horrifying, but I thought I'd get your take on that.
Yeah, Dory, that is called an NOGO. That's a no-go. You stay in there, and when that C-section is planned and you've accounted for that, you are absolutely by the side of your wife for one of life's miracles that we get to watch. So there's no important meeting with Peyton Manning that should ever get in the way of that opportunity. So you, my friend, are wrong on this one.
No,
and
Ursula,
as usual, is absolutely right.
He saw the baby come out. He just didn't see the organs get placed back in. Here's my argument, Brock. You made your case. I'll make
you
mine.
Wait till everything is sewed up, is buttoned up, is put back together before you're ever going to leave your wife, ever. She's in labor, giving birth naturally, or whether it is via the cesarean section.
Do you want to hear my reasoning on this, Brock?
I don't, actually.
Yeah.
There's no reason.
Well, I'm
going to
give it to you anyway,
really,
since
don't.
It's my show. So there are about 1,600, 1,700 people who play in the NFL, 1,800, which is rare enough. Only 32 become head coach. And the only way you do, he was an assistant coach at the time, but the reason he's a head coach today is because he's a maniac. And one of the things maniacs do is they maniacally put their profession at such a high level. And he was there for the baby coming out. He got to see that it was a boy or a girl, but that's the reason now he's a head coach is because he's a maniac. You got to have a screw loose to pursue something to that extent anyway. And now his wife, his family, his grandkids, they're financially set because he is a maniac.
Dory, there are maniacs that put others ahead of themselves, and those are the ones that last and endure. And that is why Adam Gase has bounced between organizations. Mm-hmm. It's why he has to do smelling salts on the sideline before a game, because he's nuts.
Right.
He's nuts, and he'll be out of that New York Jets job probably sooner rather than later.
Wow. You're just trying to make all the ladies listening hate me and love you even more.
Be a maniac of service and watch what happens. Put others ahead of your own interests, and you can become a star. All right? I love you. Are we done now?
Yeah, I love you, too. Okay.
I got it.
All right, Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback, and you hear him every Monday following Seahawk game days. All right, we'll talk to you next week, Brock. Thank you.
Sounds good, maniac.
Okay. Bye-bye. And lots more straight ahead is the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
Meanwhile, on the presidential campaign trail, did you know that there's going to be a presidential election about a year and a quarter from now? They're going to, right now, Donald Trump's our president. I don't know if you've heard about that. But a bunch of Democrats, they want to replace Donald Trump. Donald Trump wants to stay president for four more years. So Joe Biden is still the front runner. And we played for you Thursday and Friday. He had all these gaffes on the campaign trail. And Biden's gaffes just continued over the weekend, including when he said after the Parkland shooting, which happened when he was president, or vice president, rather. And Joe Biden had been out of office for many, many, many months when the Parkland shooting happened.
I watched what happened when the kids from Parkland marched up to, and I met with them, and then they went off to up on the hill when I was vice president. And they went off the hill to go into those neighborhoods. All those congressmen were like, no, I'm not here. I'm not here. Don't tell them I'm around.
Okay. So he's spinning this yarn about what other Congress people said, but he wasn't vice president when the Parkland tragedy happened. And he was immediately called out on it. And the thing is, these things are so easily provable and so quickly refutable that it's bizarre. And then there was this. A young woman asked Uncle Joe how many genders there are. Yeah, it's hard to hear. But you hear Joe. Joe says there are at least three. And so she says, oh, can you name them? Okay, I know it's hard to hear. She says, what are they? And then he snaps her. Don't play games with me, kid. Why is that an unfair question? Here in Washington, we just decided on driver's licenses. We're going to have male, female, and X. Why can't Joe just say that? But instead he snapped at the girl because he has no clue. He just knows he's supposed to say there are more than two. And then when somebody asks him, name the more than two. Don't play games with me, kid. And the girl that was talking to him then said,
when I asked the question, it took a few seconds for the question to register. And then he responded with three. I asked, okay, what are they? Joe Biden looked at me and said, don't mess with me, kid. I turned to walk away, and then it doesn't stop there. He grabs my arm and pulls me back to make eye contact with him again, and he yells something about marriage at me. So I walked away, and I was mad, just very, very mad that someone would actually treat me like.
Yeah, she says he grabbed her. You can't do that in this day and age.
You can see him grab her arm and pull her back. And
oh, yeah.
Don't mess with me.
I know. It's Joe's coming a little unhinged. Speaking of unhinged, how about this on MSNBC? So the guy who owns SoulCycle, he also owns the Miami Dolphins. And he made a big, he hosted a Trump fundraiser. But he also has a lot of Democrat politician friends. He just likes buying influence, regardless of party. But a bunch of celebrities now have announced that they are quitting SoulCycle, and they will never support somebody who threw a Trump fundraiser. On MSNBC, they really are elevating things. They're the ones who are always talking about, yes, our discourse has gotten so dangerous in America, and the president has to show the way. Well, maybe MSNBC contributor Ellie Mistel, maybe they need to show the way on proper discourse in America.
Right. People of color are already targets under this administration.
Right.
I have no problem with shining the light back on the donors who fund this kind of racialized hate. I go further. I want pitchforks and torches outside this man's house in the Hamptons.
Pitchforks and torches outside of the man's house in the Hamptons because he had a fundraiser for somebody. It's almost as if MSNBC will not be satisfied until they get somebody murdered. But that's what they accuse the other side of. It's all about projection from these leftists, isn't it? Okay, Fast 15 is coming up next.